As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic Football Tactics Podcast. Each week we tackle a different footballing topic or theme with tactical and analytical insight from Michael Cox and Mark Carey from The Athletic. I'm Ali Maxwell, and this week, like Lucas Hernandez in 2019, like Mark Van Bommel 2006, or Mark Hughes 1987, we're moving from Spain to Germany, from La Liga to the Bundesliga on our European tour. We've got Rafa Honigstein of The Athletic offering up his expertise. But first, let me say hi to my co-hosts. Michael, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Ali.
And you've enjoyed some Champions League action this week. Barcelona-Benfica. Last week we spoke heavily about Xavi Hernandez before his first game in charge of Barcelona. It was a 1-0 win against Espanyol. Last night, a 0-0 draw against Benfica. What are your initial Xavi at Barcelona thoughts?
I was quite impressed by them last night, actually. It was a good game. Much better than 0-0 would suggest. Two very good disallowed goals and then an incredible last-minute miss from Seferovic. But yeah, I thought Barcelona played quite well. Good shape, good structure, moved the ball quickly, lots of forward running. Obviously lacking a bit of quality in the final third. But yeah, big improvement from what we saw from them in the latter days of Ronald Koeman.
In terms of basic shape, in terms of strategy, in and out of possession, what stands out so far?
I think probably the kind of lopsided nature of how they're playing. Right back who tucks inside, Jordi Alba pushing on very high, a lot of width down the right hand side. So yeah, it's been interesting. He seems to have got his ideas across in a relatively short period of time, and it seems like there's quite a lot of optimism around Barcelona, which we haven't said for quite a while.
Good stuff. We got Mark Carey here as well. And Mark, like many other football writers and talkers, has had his week dominated by news of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer leaving Manchester United. And he did so, Mark, saying that he hoped he'd left United in a better position than where he found them. So you examined that on site this week, your latest article. What were the major conclusions there, the top line stuff?
Yeah, it fell into my lap, really, in terms of what he said there in the farewell interview, because I was already starting to look at what that difference was. But I basically looked at a kind of a zoomed out version of that difference over time. So I looked at Man United's ELO ratings, which I think might have been covered on the podcast in the past, because essentially it measures team strength as a measure, and it's standardised across all leagues, so essentially teams get more points for winning and is adjusted for the strength of the opponent. And over time, if you were to be sort of fair to Solskjaer, he has left United in a fairly better place, marginally better place than when he arrived in terms of that ELO ranking and those points. But it's interesting to see the peaks and troughs throughout that time, because there was a time where at their peak, they're actually higher than Ferguson's last season at Manchester United, which I thought was quite interesting. So there were high highs, but certainly low lows towards the end.
Slightly higher ELO rating. You'll never sing that.
And that's Rafa Honigstein. Hello, Rafa. Thank you so much for joining us on the pod this week.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're fresh from last night's Champions League goal show on BT Sport, which I am absolutely sure many of the listeners will be all across, because it is hectic, it is fun, it is a brilliant show to watch. And I'm just interested to get the opportunity to ask, what's it like being on it? Is it carnage? Is it fun? What's it like?
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. Yesterday we went a little bit rogue with Cyndi Lauper puns. Poor Mr. Lauper from Young Boys Bern had his name being used for all sorts of non-football related matters. But yeah, it's great. It's great fun. You know, to an extent, you're just watching football with your friends. The fact that you have to sort of talk a little bit is almost incidental. And Jules, of course, always goes completely crazy about PSG. So yeah, no, it's great. It's doesn't feel like work.
Of course, Wolfsburg were in action last night, and Group G, which they are a part of, it is quite something at the moment. Heading into match day 6, all four teams could still qualify, I believe. Wolfsburg themselves, Rafa, have quite a lot of work to do, but that's a pretty intriguing group to be covering.
Yeah, it's a good group. It's a good group because it doesn't feature any real proper heavyweights. That group wouldn't look too much out of place in the Europa League, and I don't mean it necessarily in a disrespectful sense, but they're all sort of evenly stacked as far as the potential, the quality is concerned. And it's produced some really interesting games, a lot of them really edgy, not always super open, not always entertaining in a football purist sense, but lots of action and controversial refereeing decisions and stuff. Unfortunately, having said all that, when you said Wolfsburg were in action last night, my reply would be, were they really in action last night? Because mm-hmm. They were like a non-entity going forward. They had one shot saved, which went onto the bar. And that was it, which for, you know, the fourth best team in Germany last season was very poor. And if they can't qualify from this group, then they don't really belong in the Champions League. And I think it's a little bit worrying for German football that they will have their numbers reduced to, in all likelihood, Bayern and Dortmund for the last 16. And even Dortmund, of course, aren't safe yet.
It feels like it's been a real rollercoaster season already at Wolfsburg. Of course, they started the campaign with Mark van Bommel in charge. He's not anymore in the dugout. They've won quite a lot of games. They have lost a lot of games as well. Is their true level looking actually a little underwhelming compared to last year's success?
I mean, even last year, people sort of scratched their heads and were trying to figure out what it is they're doing so well. But I guess the answer was straightforward. They had a really good defence. And that was the basis of everything. You know, German football is very open because of the pressing obsession, if you will. So once you play through that press, there's huge spaces available and we see a lot of goals. Wolfsburg did press as well, but they also just defended really well man v man, which a lot of Bundesliga teams don't do so well because they have strong players, they have quick players. They have in Maxence Lacroix, a wonderful, talented French centre-back who I think is going to go on to great things. So a lot of quality without the ball, but as we saw yesterday, and even in those games when they did get results, they were often relying last year on set pieces, on Maxi Arnold doing something special, but never really the free-flowing of Art Veikhorst being there in the box, but never really one of the more attractive, expensive sides in possession. And unfortunately, that level of defensive solidity has gone a little bit, and it hasn't been balanced or compensated for by an increased output attackingly. If anything, they look even less inspired going forward. So I hesitate to say the word mediocre, but they're not quite a top team. They're just a little bit below, and I think you see that in the Champions League.
Another French centre-back wonder kid, as if we needed more of those. They're like English right-backs at the moment, aren't they? We should mention that John Müller started his Athletic career this week with a bang, and with an article that has its links, its foundation in German football. The article is titled, What's So Special About the Half Spaces? With help from René Maric, who is the assistant manager of Borussia Dortmund and is something of a legend amongst all of us who like football tactics and reading about them online, because it was his work as a football tactics blogger that led to him on this incredible footballing journey that he is enjoying at the moment as assistant to Marco Rosa. And John Müller wrote this article with help from René. It's a really interesting article. I won't give too much more away, but what's so special about the half spaces? I think an indication of the sort of writing, the sort of insight and the sort of questions, really, that John Muller is going to be raising in his article. So we welcome John, delighted with his start. And if you'd like to read that article, plus Rafa, Michael, Mark's fantastic writing on the Athletic site, of course, we have a Black Friday offer as well. Sign up for just £1 a month for an entire year by visiting theathletic.com/tactics before midnight on Sunday, the 28th of November. You'll get an annual subscription to the Athletic site and app for just £1 a month for the entire year. Rafa, your latest piece was about Bayern Munich and, as ever, off-field drama, politics, soap opera, never too far away at that football club. The latest episode exploded, really, over the weekend, coincided with a defeat to Augsburg on the pitch, but really was all about off-the-pitch stuff.
Yeah, it was. You had five unvaccinated players missing that were in quarantine after contact with a positive case. And this renewed and really heated up this debate about, first of all, should players all get vaccinated? Should they be mandated to get the jab? How should clubs deal with it? And also the sporting dimension of it suddenly being important because, you know, you had the odd player missing in the past, but now it's five unvaccinated players who every time somebody in the vicinity gets COVID, and it does seem to happen quite a lot, even with vaccinated people at the moment, as this fourth wave is rushing over Germany. You're missing these guys, and especially Joshua Kimmich is an absolute key player, and Bayern just don't look the same without him. And it really increased the pressure on him and on the others to change their mind. There's been a development since I wrote the piece. I was told that three players were close to changing their mind, or, you know, sort of weighing up. And we've since learned in reports, which have not been disputed, that two players have had the jab in Musiala and Serge Gnabry, and that Joshua Kimmich is thinking about it, in the words of Hansi Flick, the German manager. So I think there is movement. I'd like to think that that change of heart has come about by them talking to physicians, talking to immunologists, talking to their teammates, rather than Bayern's decision to dock them their wages. But you never quite know what pushes somebody over the line. And there is still a question, I think, whether Bayern actually made good on that threat and really deduct the money when the paycheck for November comes in. Maybe it was just one final sort of shot across the bowl, speeding up people's thought processes.
Nagelsmann experiencing every aspect of the club that he took over this summer on the pitch. You know, it's 5 wins out of 5 in the Champions League. They are top of the Bundesliga with 28 points from 12 games, 9 wins out of 12. How are we rating the first portion of their season under Nagelsmann?
It's been mostly outstanding. I say mostly because you've had one or two bad results, defeat against Augsburg, as you mentioned. They had this horrific, crazy game where they lost 5-0 against Gladbach in the cup. And I guess more excusable, one of those unfortunate games where they create tons of chances and somehow end up losing against Frankfurt. But all the XG, all the numbers, all the whatever characteristics or metrics you want to use would have suggested that Bayern should have won that game. And it just happens. The reason why I'm slightly not more euphoric at this point is that they seem to have lost a little bit of the momentum in recent weeks. I think it's due to injuries, it's due to Kimmich missing a couple of games. Some players looking a little bit tired. The depth in the squad, as we know, is not quite that strong, especially if you looked at the bench yesterday. There were some players even on the pitch who really, I don't think, should be at Bayern, one or two. So in terms of sort of their temporary form, they have perhaps dropped down a little bit from the highs of a month or so ago, but it's still pretty convincing start, I would say. Bayern team playing some of the best football that I've seen from Bayern. And of course, that is a spell that includes Guardiola and Heinkes and lots of good stuff. So I think he is rightly in that conversation. But of course, he needs to keep that going because the real test for Bayern is always what happens in the knockout stages in the Champions League. Everything else is sort of just kind of extended warm-up. And nobody will say, oh, but they played so beautifully in September, October, if they get knocked out in the last 8 or even before.
Michael, when you've seen Bayern this season, what have you picked out tactically as a new strategy under Nagelsmann or indicators that he is really getting a style of play across?
I suppose it's been roughly what we'd expect in terms of he hasn't tried to tear up a team that was obviously working very well. But there's a few aspects of Nagelsmann's philosophy we saw at previous clubs. I think the way they press is slightly different to last season. They seem quite big emphasis on almost man-marking at times, high up the pitch, which is not necessarily something we saw under previous managers. The shape, again, it's a 4-2-3-1 on paper, which is what Bayern have been accustomed to playing. But in the build-up play with Kimmich on his own in front of the defence and the defence shifting into a three, a little bit like the Barcelona thing I mentioned earlier under Xavi, it's almost 3-1-5-1 at times, which we saw a little bit at Leipzig. And it seems to be a bit more emphasis on combinations and rotations out wide, which I think when you look at the most exciting, most interesting sides tactically in Europe over the last few years, I think that's something they all do very well. I think of Ajax doing that. I think particularly Atalanta doing that. So yeah, broadly positive, I'd say. And I'd say perhaps slightly more interesting in a tactical sense than last season, even though they were an excellent side last season. I must say I read a very good article on it by a writer called Rhys Desmond, who I wasn't previously aware of, but worth looking up on Twitter. He did a good tactical analysis of the first 2 or 3 months of Nagelsmann at Bayern, which I'd recommend Googling. But yeah, they've been fun. It's been, like I say, maybe what we would have expected from Nagelsmann, but I certainly don't mean that in a negative sense.
Mm. Rafa, is there as strong a tactical identity that surrounds the club as there would be, dare I say, at Barcelona or Ajax? Whether or not those clubs actually stick to their identity is another question, but I think we all understand what is suggested by Barcelona DNA or Total Football at Ajax, etc. Does that exist with Bayern? Is there a blueprint that managers are expected to follow, or is it simply dominate in any which way?
That's an excellent question, and I think things have changed since Louis van Gaal was the first Bayern manager in modern times to introduce a recognisable playing style that was bigger than the individuals and dogmatic almost, to a point that Bayern found it initially very hard to play that way because it was such an individualistic hero football, we call it in Germany. And I think what's happened since, especially after the failed experiment with Niko Kovac, who was a much more old school, pragmatic coach, more defensive, not a clearly defined pressing strategy, for example, was that Bayern have decided, and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge went on the record saying, we want to play in a specific way. We want to play high up the pitch, we want to press, but we also want to have really good possession. So we want to be the kind of Bayern team that we've seen under Heynckes, under Guardiola, and now under Nagelsmann. And I think they will really be careful not to pick a coach in the future who doesn't fit that blueprint. I don't think they will diverge from that too much because they've seen how better it's made them. I mean, Bayern have always had really good players, but they've only really gone to another level in the last 10 years because those good players now have also met a system that brings out the best out of them and others who are perhaps not quite at the same level. We've never had that sustained from Bayern since the mid-70s. So, yeah, maybe not the... I don't think we have the ideology, if you will. We don't have the culture surrounding that idea. There's no, Cruyff in the background. There's no, Van Gaal or people sort of talking lyrically about what Bayern are supposed to do. It's much more about the winning rather than the tactics. But internally, if you will, I think the club have made a decision that this is going to be the Bayern blueprint for years to come.
And Mark, what strikes me looking at Bayern's squad and those who have played the most minutes so far this campaign is that there's such a strong core of 11 players, really, all such recognisable Bayern names other than, you'd say, Upamecano, who joined this summer. It must be borderline impenetrable to get into as a new player. I wonder, of that gang or of the squad overall, if you look at the numbers, who really stands out this season? Again, I'm not expecting to be surprised necessarily because these are recognisable Bayern stars.
Yeah, you're spot on. I mean, yeah, it's difficult to really give too much insight that isn't kind of already obvious. I mean, I was going to say there's a lesser known player called Robert Lewandowski who's doing okay. But yeah, I mean, he scored 14 goals this season, Lewandowski, more than anyone else in the top five European leagues. And I think what's interesting is that he hasn't, it's not even like he's gone up another level, because he's sort of operating on a similar level to last season, where it was just absurd. And the season before that, he's averaging, even when you take away penalties, 1.1 goals per 90, which is just quite frightening. I think, yeah, as you say, all the typical names are kind of coming to the fore. Serge Gnabry is having a good season so far, 6 goals already. Thomas Müller is the assist king more than anyone else in the top five European leagues with 9 assists already. If I could try and find someone who's not even lesser known, really, it's just someone who I think would benefit from more minutes, but he's so young, 18 years old. He was born in 2003, which is frightening. Jamal Musiala, who is just going to go on to be such a world-class talent. He's already operating on a great level, but I think Rafa would know better than me, but I think he's coming off the bench a little bit more than getting starts at the moment. But he's just so graceful on the ball, and he's already got 2 goals, 3 assists in the league. I think he needs to fill out a little bit. I think he's quite slight, but he's got everything that a player needs to go on to be world-class.
Rafa, is he the one at the moment, both for Bayern and for the German national team? Is he the anointed one? That there seems to be every other year someone who's just guaranteed to go right to the top.
Yeah, I mean, luckily in those positions we have many ones, or the ones, yeah. because there's Havertz, there's Florian Wirtz, there's Musiala. I think Musiala has something very special because he seems to find spaces and ways around players with the ball, which looks very, very difficult from a distance, and perhaps even more difficult close up. There's something in the way he moves. I'm not sure it is that elegant, but it is somehow sort of a little bit like the guy from the Fab Four who can change his limbs into like long and elongated areas and stuff. His leg seems to kind of be flexible in different areas and different directions at the same time. But really unique player and great talent, and incredible that Bayern managed to get him from Chelsea, and more incredible even that he finds it possible to play in a team that has so much quality up front. It's a real testament, I think, to his talent. I think once Thomas Müller perhaps retires in maybe 2 or 3 years, that I think his time will really come to shine in that number 10 position.
This is the Athletic Football Tactics podcast. Next up with Rafa Honigstein, we'll talk Dortmund and RB Leipzig and their respective English wonder kids, Jude Bellingham and Tom Warville. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, Rafa, let's go on to the side in second place, Borussia Dortmund. They also have a new manager this season. Marco Rose, as mentioned, formerly of Gladbach, assisted by René Maric. And they're 1 point behind Bayern. If Nagelsmann's approval rating early on is fairly high, how does Rose compare?
I guess opinions are slightly mixed because the results have been broadly in line with expectations. Dortmund have done okay in the league, especially. They're in a decent position, closer to Bayern than perhaps they themselves expected. But of course, in the Champions League, they were absolutely humiliated by Ajax in the first game. Second game, they played better, got a little bit unlucky, but still lost. And now they have their backs against the wall against Sporting in order to qualify. And what we haven't seen so far yet, I think, is a really functioning Dortmund team. I think Dortmund throughout the last few years have always had great players, have always had moments where they play some really beautiful football, especially under Lucien Favre when they had all these attacking players combining in short spaces. They can play really some scintillating stuff. But they were also always dysfunctional. Dysfunctional when it comes to the balance between defense and attack. Dysfunctional in, when it comes to pressing. Their pressing under Lucien Favre was non-existent. Under Edin Terzic, they were better. But you could see that this was an interim coach who hadn't had time to really implement this. And now under Marco Rose, you can see signs of it working. But then they always have to change players around because injuries have really been a big problem for them. And it doesn't quite work so well. And you're still thinking, is this system that they're trying to play, which is Marlon and Erling Haaland up front, at the same time, is that really a system that can work with the players that Dortmund have? Because they have a weakness in midfield, even though Jude Bellingham is amazing. I think he carries that midfield because the players around him are not players that are at the same level. None of these players would play in the Bayern team. None of these players would probably get into the Bayern squad. And I think one Jude Bellingham is not enough to provide that center, to provide that focus, that cohesion between these two parts of the team, which are rarely connected well. And then Dortmund also have real problems in the fullback places, which is, again, for a modern team, is very difficult, I think, to compensate if you're done very central the whole time. So not all down to him. I think there's some problems in the squad that precede him. But what's interesting is that when they were at Borussia Mönchengladbach, the coaching team, they sort of said, oh, it's not so easy because we're taking over from Lucien Favre. And on Lucien Favre, there was never any pressing. And the team, it's hard to instill that mindset into the team because that Lucien Favre football is so different. It's hard to get it out of their minds. And now, of course, at Dortmund, it's almost the same problem again. After 3 years of Lucien Favre, you could see sort of the natural instinct to press and to move and to be active, to stay in a situation, doesn't maybe exist with too many of these players. And I think it's still a long way off before we can see them play the kind of football that Rosa really wants them to play.
Mm. And Michael, of course, because of Rosa and Maric's background and their journey to this point, you know, the perception of them as a management team is that they're such deep tactical thinkers, and it sets some very high standards for them on that specific front. There's probably going to be more scrutiny on the tactical side of this Dortmund side than under previous managers. What have you made of their first few months in charge, watching them in the Bundesliga or in the Champions League?
Yeah, compared to Bayern, I found it a little bit difficult to get my head around them in the sense that they've played a variety of systems. I think even when there is one formation, obviously there's a lot of interchanging within matches, and sometimes they're playing two or three different systems at once. A couple of games I saw, it was almost like 4-2-3-1, and then they shifted into 4-1-4-1 with Jude Bellingham really the player moving between those positions. And like Rafa says, times he does seem to be carrying this midfield. He's just been excellent. You can see that as well in terms of the minutes he's played. I think he's the player who's played the second most minutes behind one of the centre backs, Akanji. It's almost like they can't do without him. Just looking at the numbers, it was quite interesting to see how much they've dropped off in terms of their possession statistics, in terms of their pass completion statistics. The first 15 or so games of the season, pass completion rate was always up in kind of 80%, and has dropped off quite significantly in the last three of the last four games. I don't know whether that's a stylistic thing or whether they're just being dominated a little bit more. But with two losses in the last few games against Ajax the second time round and against Leipzig, maybe less positive than we would have been this time last month.
I saw on Twitter probably about 6 weeks or so ago now, the assistant at Maric was involved in a discussion, a debate with someone like us about Dortmund's formation and whether it was a diamond in possession or whether it was a three at the back shape, whatever it might have been. And it just struck me as quite amazing that you've still got someone like that in the position that he's in, still discussing things so in depth with, well, anyone really on social media. Very, very rare. Raph, I know you've spoken to Maric for articles on the piece as well. I don't want to make it sound like he is the key man within this Dortmund setup, even alongside Marco Rose. I'm sure there's tons of other first team staff involved. But what's he like to know, to talk tactics with?
Oh, amazing, amazing guy. Really open, as you said, willing to talk, also willing to listen. Interested in your opinions, even though, you know, as a journalist, I think we know only a fraction of what he knows, and it'd be stupid to pretend differently. But yeah, just a great guy. And you could see how difficult I think it is at times, because you see things not working, and the assumption, I think, from the outside, from us, is often, well, it's not working because the plan isn't right. They just haven't figured out how to play. But often coaches have made a plan, and for whatever reason, the players just do something completely different or do it badly, and then they look as if they don't know what they're doing. And I think that is the difficulty that they're facing at times when they do certain things in training or they do certain things in video, and then for whatever reason, it doesn't come off on the pitch, or the opposition are wise to it and negate your tactics, and then you look a little bit foolish. And My hunch is, as I said a bit earlier, my hunch is that they're still trying to figure out what the best use of this team is, which is lopsided, which does have issues in terms of its team dynamics. There's a lot of really good young players. There's not so many really good middle-aged players. It's all, I think, very, very difficult. And we haven't seen that balance, that consistency that Dortmund have been craving for so long. The results, as we said, are decent enough. But even in those games, even the game against Stuttgart, Dortmund were not convincing. They could have drawn that game. They just rarely play a game where you feel they're in complete control over 90 minutes. This is only going one way. Even against the lesser sides, they tend to struggle and tend to have real problems making their superior individual quality count against sides that just work very hard and just defend well.
I think it's interesting what you said at the start as well there, Rafa, where it's, because I've spoken to René Maric myself, I've been fortunate enough to chat with him, and he obviously is has an incredible football brain. And I do find it interesting that maybe there's something to be said about that kind of communication to the players. Not to say that they aren't very good at it, they're probably world-class at it, but just how much simplicity you might need to communicate that to the players for them to implement it, because they must have such incredible tactical ideas. But I think I read from one of your pieces about how Marco Reus didn't think that they could work very well with a back three. So I guess they've changed between a back three and a back four. And I guess whatever it is that they kind of go with, maybe stick with it for a bit of a sustained period so that all players can kind of get used to it. But I think you're also right on the balance as well. And I guess the numbers back that up in terms of that balance between attack and defence. So it looks like they do kind of have, you know, enough in attack, as you'd imagine, even with Haaland being injured until, I think, at least the new year. But they're creating chances worthy of about two goals a game. So that's the third best in the league behind Bayern and actually RB Leipzig as well, which I'm sure we'll come on to. But I think it is that balance between the defence, because they need to sharpen up the defence in terms of they're conceding chances worthy of 1.3 non-penalty goals per 90. So for context, that's actually the ninth best in the division. Mm. So it shows that kind of disparity between
deeply average
their attack and their defence. Deeply average, exactly. Yeah, and you compare that to Bayern. Bayern have the best, again, underlying numbers in attack and in defence as well. So that's, I mean, Bayern are obviously a different beast, but they are going to walk to the title if they carry on, and Dortmund's is mixed, shall we say.
Mm, that's interesting. You start the pod and you think Dortmund only 1 point behind Bayern Munich. Perhaps this is the year we get a really exciting title race. But from Rafa's analysis and from Mark applying the lens of numbers, you start to realise that there's probably a fair amount between them at this stage. Let's talk about RB Leipzig, Rafa, because I always see them as the side who, at the very least, must be targeting being the third strongest team in Germany, and I'm sure realistically challenging Dortmund for second place at the moment. And yet we find them in seventh place in the Bundesliga as we record, with Jesse Marsch in charge, another new manager in the dugout of a big German side. They've had some thumping wins in the Bundesliga this season, but also some very disappointing results below their high standards. A few teething issues, perhaps, under Jesse Marsch so far.
Yeah, I think that's right. They have, of course, lost some pretty important people, starting with Julian Nagelsmann, but also the captain, Marcel Sabitzer, has gone. Upamecano, Konate, even though Konate was not so much of a factor last season. And it will take some time for this team to gel. But I think there's also an issue that they're sort of at the crossroads a little bit, because Julian Nagelsmann, I think his great impact at Leipzig was that he took the Leipzig blueprint and added bits of possession, added bits of refinement, bits of variation to it. And that made Leipzig more consistent and less reliant on transition, especially against teams that don't really give you time or space, I should say, don't give you space to play under transition. They became a lot cuter. They played a lot of football in the half spaces, often playing a system where you had no real wingers, but three or four number 10s, sometimes not even a real number 9. And Jesse Marsch has come in and said, I want to go back to the original stuff. I want to go back to 4-3-3, bang, 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 kill them with speed, really, really quick. Once we win the ball, first ball has to go forward, bang. And you look at the players that they have in this unbelievably deep squad, and you think, is this really the best use of Forsberg, of Szoboszlai, of Nkunku, of Olmo, to play with so much sort of manic pace? Slow things down a bit and, you know, enjoy your possession, enjoy the football that you can play a bit. And I think there's been a real difficulty of the coach and the players and what they used to play in the Nagelsmann with three at the back, these things kind of blending together. Jesse Marsch at times has gone back with a three, especially in pressurized situations. The moment it worked well, he felt, okay, I can go now back to the four because now the system is working. I can play the system I really want to play. Then there's another setback. And we've been going back and forth and back and forth. And the overall result is deeply mediocre by Leipzig standard. They've been knocked out of Champions League. Okay, against PSG and Man City, this can happen, but still, they expected at least to put up more of a fight. They're not a contender for the title, even though a lot of people have looked at their squad and think, actually, the depth of the squad, if you just look at the numbers, is better than Dortmund and Bayern, even though they don't have quite the same caliber of superstars. But I have so many sort of decent 7 out of 10 players, more than the two others. So the pressure on Marsch has been mounting, and there's an ebb and flow. You know, he wins just enough games to stay in the job, but he doesn't win enough to be beyond criticism. And that's unfortunately a pattern I see playing out until the end of the season.
Interesting. It sounds like from a tactical perspective compared to the Nagelsmann era, Marsch is trying to give them wings, which of course is the whole Rasenballsport company corporate ethos at its very core.
But they don't have wingers. So, you know, there's not a single player that you would say he's actually a winger. So would you play that kind of really fast football when you have so many hybrid players who are more like number 10s? Yes, they can play wide, but they're all happier having the ball and having short spaces rather than these big spaces that you get in transition football. So I'm just not sure his vision marries up well or works well with the squad at hand, and also with what the squad used to play so well under Nagelsmann.
Well, I wonder whether their recruitment team, and in particular anyone who's just joined in a data scientist capacity, might be looking for wide players in the next few windows. It'll be interesting to watch that. Rafa, did you give Tom some good tips? Bars, clubs, cafes, Leipzig hipster spots?
I'm not an expert on Leipzig. I've only been there for 2 times, so he probably knows more than me already after a few days there. But it is a lovely city to live in. all very, very close. You can walk to the stadium, you can walk into town, you can walk to the training ground. It's all within walking distance. So I'm sure the quality of life will be pretty amazing.
Wow, he's ignoring us already. He's got too big for his boots, I'm afraid. Yeah. Looking for inside info, but it's all redacted so far. Michael, you've seen a bit of Leipzig in the Champions League where it's been chaos as ever, really. They've averaged 2 goals a game scored in the group stage, but they've only got 1 point from 4 games at the time of recording. What's not working for them?
Yeah, tough group, like Rafa says, but the defeat against Bruges was a bit of a disaster, really. And I think it'd be a massive failure if they don't even qualify for the Europa League. I mean, they feel like a side who, you know, there's always a big gap between the group stage and the knockout stage. They feel like a side who could do something in the Europa League, but going to have to beat Bruges in the return game, which is tonight as we're recording, to get back in that. I mean, when I've seen them, they've just looked a bit easy to play through. They've been a bit exposed down the flanks. Certainly were in that game against Bruges. And I think that they always seem to get the centre-backs always seem to be covering a really big amount of space, which I think you have to be a really good defender in terms of mobility and in terms of one-on-one situations to cope with that. But, yeah, the ball just seems to be... They're trying to play more quickly going forward, and it feels like the ball's coming quickly back at them as well, which, yeah, I'm not sure the defenders are quite good enough to cope with.
I think, again, it comes back to that balance, and I don't want to just sound like a scratch record. I suppose it's a bit like Dortmund, where it's that balance between attack and defence. And I think is it more in recent games, again, Rafa will be able to tell me more, that it's more of a 3-4-3. I think Jesse Marsh started off with more of a 4-2-3-1, a 4-3-3, and it's in recent games kind of stuck with it. So it'd be interesting to see how that balance changes from being a bit more kind of swashbuckling to a little bit more control, because I think it's a bit of a trade-off between the two. And as you say, Michael, less exposed defensively as well. But I looked into their numbers in terms of just talking in the league at this point, but their direct speed, so essentially how fast they progress the ball upfield in metres per second. And typically, it's not, you know, nailed on, but typically across Europe, the more dominant sides kind of in the league are also, they're fairly low down in terms of direct speed because they have that control. The ball doesn't necessarily have to go forward each time. And Leipzig are fifth highest in the Bundesliga. And Dortmund and Bayern Munich are right lower down compared to them there. So again, it just shows that it's just high energy, get it forward as quickly as possible, but potentially at the expense of that control. And out of possession there, their passes per defensive action, their PPDA is a proxy of their pressing intensity is the second highest in the Bundesliga. So all their sort of vital signs, I guess, do match with that idea that they are a bit, yeah, swashbuckling in and out of possession. But as Michael and Rafa said, they just maybe need to get that balance back and just get a bit more kind of control and see where that might take them, because they need to go up the league quite quickly.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Tactics Podcast's Bundesliga Fest. And next up, we're tackling a couple of the division's overachievers.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Rafa, I have to ask you about Freiburg, because they are third in the table under Christian Streich. And you named them in your most recent piece on the Athletic site, the neutrals darlings. Why is that?
Yeah, I'm not sure so much for their football or tactical refinement, because they are sometimes a little bit of an acquired taste. But of course, as a club and as a symbol of what they're trying to do, I think it's hard not to warm to them. They have always a very low budget. Very passionate crowd, a really idiosyncratic, very interesting manager who can talk about any subject far beyond football, and a real sense of togetherness and some kind of a very, very strong ethos of team spirit, which somehow lifts them far beyond their individualistic capabilities. This has become a bit of a running gag, but sort of I look at them every single season in the summer and I'm thinking they're probably going to be fighting against relegation. You look at the squad and you're thinking, you know, these players, I've never heard of them, or if I have heard of them, I'm thinking there's no reason I should have heard of them because they're just so deeply average and nondescript. But somehow you put them together and you create this, there's this special energy that Freiburg seem to be able to create in a kind of a feedback loop between them, the crowd, Streich, and they tend to overachieve consistently. Of course, as is often the case, you know, the moment you write this big feature in The Athletic, they start losing. But I guess it's just a classic case of regression to the mean, because even I think with the best will in the world, you cannot see them finishing top four. I think that would have been absolutely extraordinary. It can still happen, but I think top six, top seven is really an incredible achievement. The equivalent of them winning the title, everything else would just be, yeah, just be dreamland, I think.
Just to weigh in, just because I heard a statistical term of regression to the mean, I just thought I had to jump in.
the bat
but
signal.
It is backed up by the numbers. So, I mean, yeah, they're built on solid foundations at the back defensively this season. So I don't think any team has conceded fewer than Freiburg's 10 in the league this season, which is great. But their expected goals is 16. So they've conceded chances worthy of 16 goals so far this season. So that overperformance of conceding six goals fewer is actually the most of any side in the Bundesliga this season. So again, you would expect regression to the mean over a bit of a longer period, that they might actually start conceding just a little bit more. I just had to weigh in on that. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, Rafa had built an image of Christian Streich being something of a footballing alchemist, just mixing together ingredients, creating something magical. You also did say that the style of play was something of an acquired taste. What does that taste like for the tactical connoisseurs that haven't seen Freiburg?
It's basically a lot of man marking. Some good pressing, some really good defending, a little bit old school. There's something very Italian about this team. It doesn't quite fit with the surroundings and the Streich madness and this. But they play like a highly organized sort of early 90s Italian side, I think, minus one or two superstars that even the less Italian teams seem to have at that time. They don't have these players, certainly not since Max Kruse have moved on. So, really not the team to win over neutrals as far as the football is concerned. I remember doing a half-season review in 1920, and Freiburg came out well below in most metrics as far as the attack was concerned. They were just deeply, deeply below average, really. But somehow they get the results, and the story is beautiful. So we let them off for the actual football because we like the narrative.
Do you know what? And sorry to bring it back to the Premier League, because we're actually having a month off the Premier League. But there are aspects to what you've discussed that sound a little Dicean, and Burnley in particular. But then the next club that I wanted to ask you about before we let you go is Union Berlin. And I wondered whether there were aspects of Burnley and Sean Dyche in their success and their incredible story as well. So it'd be interesting to get your take on it. Just to give the listeners some context, Union were promoted through the playoffs in 18-19. They came 11th in the Bundesliga the following season. Then a 7th place finish last season earned them the right to play in the Europa Conference League. And this season, they're 5th in the league table. It's an incredible story of continued success and improvement under manager Urs Fischer. What is so special about them that they can continue to improve?
Well, again, I think there's a very special backstory about the connection between them and the fans and a special culture around the club and how they managed to feed off their energy and overwhelm teams who are perhaps not quite ready for that sort of experience, especially when there's a full stadium, which unfortunately hasn't happened too often over the last couple of years. But there's more than that. I think under Urs Fischer, they've gone from a pretty straightforward, dare I say, Route 1 team that went up with a big physical approach and proper number nines, elbowing the centre-backs and then people rushing on from midfield for the second balls, that kind of game, but very well played, very precisely played, to a much more versatile and much better footballing side. I mean, they have good players now. I think they have more control. They have more finesse about them. They look much happier in possession, but they haven't lost that grittiness and that edge, which is almost sort of goes beyond tactics. It's the willingness to win the 50-50s. It's the kind of attitude with which you play. It's not something, Mark, I'm not sure you have a metric for it, not something that you can easily quantify, But when you see it, you know it, you know it's there. And somehow Union have that. And in a league that has a lot of teams playing very organized pressing and trying to play decent football, there is something about that rawness and about that kind of, yeah, sometimes sort of barely contained aggression that makes them incredibly effective.
Which I honestly, you could have been talking about the concept of love when you said you can't easily quantify it, but you know it when you see it. It's right. So, and then you talked about rawness, and I thought, did we move away from Union Berlin? But no, but no, we didn't. Mark, I mean, what stands out from the metrics, from the things that we can measure? What stands out in Fischer's side?
Well, I was going to weigh in and say that I can't quite quantify rawness per 90, but what I can do is, so I looked at their passes per defensive action. So again, that indication of pressing intensity. And it was interesting what you said there, Rafa, because they actually have the lowest PPDA, pressing intensity, of anyone else in the league. So it kind of suggests to me that they have that kind of, yeah, that discipline, that solid defensive structure, rather than being your typical kind of, what you sort of said is the typical German Bundesliga side. So again, it might be unquantifiable, but the numbers kind of back that up a little bit, that they aren't sort of your typical German team.
But I guess it does, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that in the areas of the pitch, Rafa, where they do decide to engage, that they aren't doing so with some intensity, with some physicality, which, you know, wins them those battles.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I think, as Mark has said, or as the numbers would suggest, that intensity tends to happen quite deep in their own half. And that's why I say there's something slightly old-fashioned about them. You know, you that's how you would defend. You know, you'd all go back and then defend, and then you all go forward and attack, and then you all go back and defend. And it's a bit like that with Union. But they have some real footballers as well, I think, especially now, you know, with the likes of Awoniyi giving them a whole new dimension, you know, an attacker who's fast, who can work the channels. They didn't have that before. They had your classic Scandinavian centre forward. This has added real quality, and they tend to get their transfer strategy really right. I mean, they're not blessed with huge amounts of money, so they have to be very careful. But as happens with good coaches, their players, the players that come in, tend to do well and tend to immediately become part of a functioning collective. So I think Urs Fischer, because he's Swiss, because he doesn't say a lot, because he is sort of fairly neutral in his appearance and doesn't do any crazy things, doesn't get, I think, the recognition that he perhaps deserves, because he's maybe too quiet a character. But when it comes to looking at who's done really well in the Bundesliga, I think we have to mention him pretty near the top of the list in the last couple of years.
Again, I think let's get him and Sean Dyche round a table, enjoying a pint together. I think that would be good Athletic content if someone could hook that up. Mark, we do have to just touch a little bit further on, you know, the standout story, to my eyes anyway, on the playing side. And Rafa mentioned him, Taiwo Awoniyi, who was signed from Liverpool, which I had not realised. It wasn't a name that I'd come across. That's because he was on loan at seven different clubs in six consecutive seasons. Probably never saw the inside of that very fancy new training ground that Liverpool have. The last time he was on loan was with Union, and then they spent a not insignificant amount of money making him permanent this summer. And only Lewandowski has scored more goals in the Bundesliga this season.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he scored eight goals for Union this season. That, when you look at it across, again, I try to keep a bit of context across the whole of the top five European leagues as well. So that's 0.8 non-penalty goals per 90, which is the eighth highest across those top five European leagues. So he's running quite hot at the moment. And yeah, so sort of eagle-eared or eagle-eyed listeners will know that, yeah,
he used to...
those eagles and their ears.
I didn't know they had ears.
It's a podcast. It's all like, I can just apply it to that. It's as good as you're going to get from me. But he did. He was at Liverpool, but I wouldn't say that he played for Liverpool. That's why I've got to be careful there, because as a Liverpool fan, anyone who's had any connection with Liverpool, I will follow through, you know, thick and thin. So he didn't actually ever play a competitive game, but I think it was work permit issues that he was constantly sent on loan to eventually the idea that he'd eventually come back. And I think he was always sort of well thought of, and clearly you can see why, because he's done so well. But I think if he carries on as he is, he'll get some of the bigger clubs swarming around him.
Well, Rafa, thank you so much. Your writing, your podcasting, your broadcasting on the Bundesliga and German football as a whole is an absolute delight, and it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us on the pod this week.
Thank you so much for having me. Wiedersehen.
Well, I have absolutely loved this period of time talking all things Bundesliga. A huge thank you, not just to Rafa Honigstein for joining us, but for Michael and Mark for adding a sprinkling of expertise as well. Of course, Rafa's writing on all things Bundesliga is absolutely obligatory for anyone who likes following German football or football in general. Mark and Michael are doing incredible stuff on site at the moment. Many of you will know that already. Many of you will not, and this is the time to join The Athletic. If you haven't already, there is a Black Friday offer. £1 a month for an entire year is the Black Friday offer. And to get that, visit theathletic.com/tactics before midnight on Sunday, the 28th of November. So do make sure you get signed up today. And also make sure that you're subscribed to this podcast feed, because we've got plenty on the agenda in the coming weeks on the Athletic Football Tactics podcast. And we'd love for you to join us. So have a brilliant rest of your day. Thank you for listening. We'll talk again next week on the Athletic Football Tactics podcast.
The Athletic.